right. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us here for DCN. We are here with a podcast interview with Dennis Culver. I'll be your host, Kendra Hale. I am joined by not only James, but also David, two of our other fellow DCN staff. I will let them go ahead and introduce themselves, and then we'll come to the reason we are all here, Mr. Dennis Culver. Starting off, we have James.
Lovely to be here. Lovely to be able to talk to you, Dennis, and talk comics with a few more nerds.
Right on. All right, and then David.
Hello, hello. I get to fanboy over Doom Patrol some more. Excellent.
All right, and then the reason for this season, we are all here today to prod and poke at Dennis Culver. Dennis, can you please tell our audience who you are and what you are known for?
Tell you, when you say prod and poke, that makes me nervous, but I'll do my best. I'm Dennis Culver. I write Unstoppable Doom Patrol for DC, formerly Future State Gotham as well. Recently, Night Terror Satana, creator-owned books I've done is Burnouts through Image Comics, Chrome through Dark Horse. I've got a webtoon called Gates of Hell as a webtoon original, webtoon original, that's done with Yuki Saki. I've been drawing and writing comics for years. I started out drawing, and then I've been more recent years writing books.
That's wonderful. We are so happy to have you with us today. It's an absolute honor to be able to grill you. I promise we'll be gentle. Stay for it as Purple Boys.
I'll do my best.
We want the truth.
Yes, we want everything that we're not supposed to know. All right, we will do a round robin style, so we will go ahead and we'll start with James. You have the first question, sir.
First question from me. I would say, how involved were you with the Justice League Incarnate writing? And like, I was looking it up, and you are a co-creator of the Batwoman Who Laughs.
That's right. Along with Dr. Multiverse, who appears in that.
Oh, nice.
It can be a different process depending on what you're doing and what's involved. Sometimes when it's if it's a case where a writer's been there longer and it's a newer writer, then it's you know, the newer writer's probably doing a lot of the grunt work and writing and stuff while the older writer is kind of supervising and collaborating. It's a little different when I've co-written with Josh. We've done a number of projects together, and almost all of them have been different. Like Josh and I, Josh Williamson, we've known each other probably 20 years. When I first moved out to LA, he was my comic shop retailer, and we kind of casually knew each other that way, and then I ended up moving to Portland a few years later, and then unbeknownst to me, Josh also moved to Portland, and we kind of just discovered at conventions, like, we kept running into each other, and we're like, wait a minute, you live here now too? And we actually became a lot closer when we were both living in Portland together. We'd go to lunch a lot. Over the course of that, we kind of became comics buddies and story buddies, where we'd run scripts back and forth with each other. When he was writing RoboCop for Boom, on the last arc, he was a little buried, and he brought me in as a co-writer. And that was something where I was a little greener writing stuff, so it was a lot of me, like, him helping me kind of figure it out and doing those things. But also reading his existing story, because there was, you know, 8 issues or however many before that, that, you know, and kind of bringing that all in for a landing to a satisfying end. But it was still a lot of collaboration, a lot of back and forth. He told me what his story goals were, and I was kind of adding things as we went along there to kind of help bring it home. With Future State Gotham, it was a little more, Josh had wrote the Future State Red Hood story, and it was like they did that story, and DC kind of wanted to experiment with, like, doing something in a manga style. And Josh was buried. He's like, well, why don't we bring Dennis in? And so we kind of came into that with just, you know, DC wanted this manga thing, and I'm like, why don't we blow a big hole in Gotham like in Akira or something, you know? And it just, and it's like, ooh, what if it was bat-shaped and things like that? So that was also just us kind of bouncing ideas off of each other and playing back.
Wow, forward. They took that idea for issue one, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, because I was like, if that's what you got to do, then we just got to go big, right? You know, you make Scarface a giant mecha. Like, you know, I was just throwing all the tropes in there. With something like Justice League Incarnate, though, it's a little bit different because it was leading up to Dark Crisis. And we knew that going in, obviously. This was Josh's big master plan. And, you know, that it also spun out of the Infinite Earth. What was it called? Infinite Frontier. The Infinite Frontier stuff, which had President Superman and the Justice League Incarnate in there. So it was like all of this stuff was kind of already in motion. And Josh brought me in again. He was crunched on time, but also he knew that this was kind of lean heavily on like multiversity and stuff. And he knew that I was pretty deep on Grant Morrison stuff. So it was kind of that too. But it was a lot of us talking about multiversity, us talking about the crisis stuff, because we knew that it led into that. The idea of the Great Darkness being the villain was kind of developing at that point. So it was him and I discussing those things. Ultimately, that was all his decisions to make and figure out. But, you know, it was me throwing ideas into the mix. Once we decided, you know, that we were going to kind of be world hopping through the multiverse, I was thinking of, you know, there's got to be the crazy issue where they just go to a bunch of different worlds. And that was kind of, I think it was issue three, where they do that. And that's kind of the centerpiece of that series. So it was me kind of throwing stuff out there. I think Batwoman Who Laughs was my suggestion. I was like, let's go for it. Let's just, you know, if there's a Lady Batman, she's probably got the same problems as Batman, right? And so like, let's make
it. And her isn't her whereabouts currently unknown?
That's true. Yeah, she's out there somewhere. Yeah. So yeah, see what happens. We got to bring back, I brought back Justice League Incarnate because they were kind of at the end defeated completely. Well, at the end of, I guess, Justice League 75, when they all died. They were kind of still out there. And so I was doing one of the Dark Army special, which is also written with Wade and Delilah Dawson. And my thing to bring back to that is, well, we have this dangling thread of Justice League Incarnate. Let's bring them back into the mix. And so, you know, it was kind of cool. Like the last part of that story is written by Wade, so it's kind of neat to have a character that I co-created, Dr. Multiverse, kind of being written by Wade too. So that was neat. But yeah, I love those characters dearly. I particularly love the chemistry between President Superman and Dr. Batman. It's a dynamic that has never been really explored, because those are just essentially different characters. And so it was like, instead of the normal interaction, which is like a billionaire and a reporter, we've suddenly got this, you know, a politician and a surgeon. And I think that's just it's really super interesting to me to bring those characters together and have them bounce off of each other.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, you were talking multiverse, and in another multiverse, just to throw it out there, David and I actually met working in a comic book shop together.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So in another multiverse, one of us is the author and you're interviewing us.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That's a great comic. That's why comic shops are great, right? Like there's the community aspect that I think should never be undersold. It's what's great about comic conventions too. Like just meeting people that have the same interests in you and like can expose you to books. Like I have friends when I'm at a convention with them, no matter what I'm doing at the convention, I'm like, hey, what's your pick of the show? Like, what's the book you like? And then like, I'll go check it out, you know, because I trust their taste and stuff. And it's like, that's, I don't know. I mean, like the IRL community of comics is something that isn't talked about enough and it isn't embraced enough. Like, I think it's really important.
I think 90% of our days working in the comic shop is recommending stuff to people.
It's yeah, just, exactly. Yeah.
It's that level of trust that you've built up with them. It's great. It's fantastic.
There's nothing like a good shop with like good people working there that you know that you can trust, and they know what you like already going in, and they can say, hey, I know you're a big fan of this book, you should try this book because it's the same author, it's the same artist, or it's a similar vibe or whatever. Like that's the best. Like when you've got a good shop like that, you can't beat it.
No. All right, David, how about you for your question?
I had a good question, but I think you've already kind of answered it. But what attracted you to writing the Doom Patrol in the first place?
Surprisingly, you would think it's the Grant Morrison stuff. Like I can see where you're going with that. And I'm a fan. Like I was reading a lot of those comics when I was a teenager. The Grant Morrison one specifically, and that kind of led me into reading, you know, like with JLA and the Invisibles and all that stuff. So certainly a fan of the book. I wasn't intending on pitching it when I was talking to my editor, Ben, about it. Like I had opinions about it and I'd been watching the show and I was a huge fan of the show, just the way they adapted all of the Doom Patrol stuff. But I was more or less talking with my editor, kind of as Future State was wrapping up, about what's next. And Burnham also contributed to Justice League Incarnate. He did like a 10-page sort of history of all the crisis moments throughout the DC universe. And Burnham and I've said this a number of times, but a lot of people don't know, is we used to be in a studio together for a number of years with some other artists. So Burnham and I had that kind of pre-existing relationship too. And so us working together on that Justice League Incarnate story, there's a shorthand, and also we were already talking every day through DMs or whatever, so it was very easy for us to connect on collaborating and making a comic. And talking to Ben, he was like, well, you and Burnham should do something together since you guys get along so well together. I was like, that's a good idea. And then we're just kind of talking about ideas for books, and I had this idea for Robot Man, which was kind of an issue. It was like issue three, what issue three turned out to be. Like, I just like the idea that Cliff is also this like really talented professional driver. So in my mind, he's the best driver in the DC universe. And I think that's just a robot driving a car that's like super cool. And so I was like, I want to do a road trip comic where like Cliff's trying to, you know, do a cannonball run or get somebody from point A to point B. And he's trying to keep away from whoever's after him and all of that. And that was something that seemed like a lot of fun. And through that conversation with Ben, I started just kind of talking about the Doom Patrol and more of, I was kind of bitching, to be honest, is complaining. I was like, everything in the DC universe right now kind of revolves around this giant pillar of the Justice League, where it's like, you know, it's either Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, like, or if it's Teen Titans, like even Titans now, while they're supposedly replacing the Justice League, they're still all the former sidekicks of the Justice League. And then the Justice Society is kind of the mentors of the Justice League. And so it all just to me revolves around this giant thing. And while there are families of books orbiting that pillar, it's still at the end of the day, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And where if you compare that to like Marvel has the Avengers and the X-Men and Fantastic Four and, you know, and then like the solo characters with their solo universes. And there's so much more variety there as far as what supports that universe, the various pillars. And DC has that, it's just underdeveloped. And one of those things is Doom Patrol. And I was like, you know, Doom Patrol was created the same year as the X-Men. It came out before the X-Men. Speaking of multiverse, in a different world, it would be just as robust and big as the X-Men was, right? And I was just kind of going on about that. And I was like, you know, the Doom Patrol should be a pillar. You know, these other things should be a pillar. Just kind of going. And he's like, well, why don't you and Burnham do Doom Patrol? And I was like, huh, that's a pretty good idea. And especially thinking about Burnham drawing the Doom Patrol, he loves drawing monsters. He loves drawing mummies. And I was just like, yeah, Burnham drawing Doom Patrol, that's a no-brainer. And so I texted him. I was like, hey, Ben thinks we should do Doom Patrol. And Burnham was like, hell yeah. And so I did the thing I the way I would approach anything is I kind of reread everything. Just went back and just started rereading all of the Doom Patrol comics. And that included the Grant Morrison stuff, but it was beyond that. It was everything because I like the approach. It's an approach Grant took to Batman, where it was like this holistic take of like, what if all of these comics happened to Batman? And so I kind of had that same idea of like, what if all of this Doom Patrol stuff happened some way, shape, or form, you know? Mm. And what if it's this giant chronology, you know? And when you start looking at it that way, you kind of see there's a arc of what these characters go through. Like when they first start out and, you know, as we know it, Niles rescues them and he kind of helps them. And they're kind of, you know, they're not necessarily your traditional superhero in any way. Like they really kind of hate themselves and they consider themselves freaks. And through that process, they kind of, you know, they have this dark turn when we do get to the Grant Run, finding out that Niles was the one that even caused all of this to happen to them. But as you keep going and you keep pushing through with these characters, you get to the Gerard Way run, which was the last run before me. And I think you can argue that they're kind of healing and they're kind of getting through their pain and they're kind of figuring out their stuff. And so to me, that presented the question of, well, what do you do next? Like, after you've been through something really tragic and after you've been through the healing, or at least, you know, getting there, I think as humans, there's this natural desire for us to want to help other people. You know, if we've been through a dark tunnel and we see someone going through that same dark tunnel, you know, you're like, hey, take my hand, I'll show you the way. And so that was the idea. You know, they were riding around in an ambulance in the previous incarnation, and I was like, let's just push that. Like, let's make them superhero first responders. Let's put them in orange instead of red. Like, let's make them look like EMTs when they show up to, you know, a superhero fight. And I think that it, you know, there's a lot going on as I was developing those ideas, you know, whereas like a traditional superhero team might be responding to something like the police. You know, the idea of defunding the police and taking it and putting it into different categories and different ways of dealing with problems instead of just showing up with batons. You know, it's this idea of like, well, what if they have a different approach? And that approach was saving the world by saving the monsters. And that was kind of my North Star tagline that I kind of wrote in my notebook, where it's like, that's the first line in the pitch. Like everything kind of goes from there. Like it's everything that we're thinking about and doing, it's saving the world by saving the monsters. And so it kind of all evolved from that. And I think while it pays a lot of heed to the Morrison run, I feel like we're kind of paying heed to all the rest of the runs too. And just kind of trying to make it one cohesive tapestry. It might not have happened as in the same order that the issues came out, but I think there's like, you know, if you have a specific continuity question, you want to get really nerdy at a convention with me, I'll be happy to dive into it. Tell you where I think it happens.
Excellent. Just so you yeah. know, it's now canon that Cliff is the best driver in the DCU. That's your fault. You know, you've said it.
As far as I'm concerned, that's a thing. And, you know,
that's what you got to pitch next. You know, they do the summer like one shot specials, the winter one shot specials. You got to do a cannonball run with all the drivers of the DCU.
Like I don't know if you guys know the Wacky Racers cartoon. But of the team and villains have their own cars and everything. Why they're doing it, that's not important. The important thing is they're all driving around trying to screw each other over.
And I'm thinking about a multiverse as well. The year is 2000. The movie's coming out. Patrick Stewart playing the Chief.
Sure.
Hugh Jackman as Cliff Steele. Like, Patrick Stewart can't cut a break without being in a wheelchair. Can he, like?
Yeah. I mean, listen, Famke Janssen as Crazy Jane is not a bad idea.
And James Marsden is Mr. Negative. But
Negative Man. I think that works. We could shoehorn all that in.
You heard it here first.
Yep.
Oh yes.
Somewhere out there in the multiverse, all things are possible.
Well, we are all here because of Steve J. Ray, who we all love and adore. And we are grateful to him for doing it. Sadly, he couldn't be here, but he did send along some questions.
Okay.
One of which you already answered, because his went right to the heart of Grant Morrison, whether you liked his work or not. And you being with Chris Burnham. So you answered his questions beautifully.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think if you're a fan of the Doom Patrol series, like you're a fan of the show, if you know the Doom Patrol, like I'm a super fan of the stuff. I just never thought, I don't know, it just never occurred to me like I should be pitching that until my editor was like, hey, why don't we go down this path? But I think if you look at that, you can tell that I definitely like the Morrison run. Like, you know,
just a little bit.
Like it's mentioned, and you know, there's reasons why we're setting the table with all this stuff. And I feel like if you read these first five issues, you'll have strong ideas. I don't know. I've left clues out there that I thought are too obvious that nobody's picked up on. But it's my challenge to you now. If you want to reread it and see what you think is going to happen in issues 6 and 7, you'll have a lot of fun.
I don't want to brag or anything, but some of us may have already read a few issues ahead.
Oh, have you guys issue 6 already?
Not telling, maybe.
Oh, sweet, sweet, sweet.
I'm just giving it all away over here, not in like, yeah. And you're like, no, we're not telling. I'm like, oh, well.
Come on, play it cool.
Well, yeah, depending on when this is airing, if we're planning to air it, like, you know.
I think issue 6, I think, was my favorite so far.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is the payoff of everything that we've kind of been building to.
To the general public, you'll have to read David's review when it comes out.
Yes.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you guys dig it. I'm glad to hear that you got to read it already. That's awesome. I didn't realize it was already circulating out there in the world. That's
only
rad.
For the reviewers.
Yes,
only
yes, for of reviewers. Course.
But Kendra, that could lead on to one of Steve's other questions.
Ooh, yes. Well, there's two that are left, and one of them is probably going to be my favorite. So Steve asks, what was receiving your first compensation like? How did it feel to see your words with art in a real published physical comic book for the very first time?
It's pretty neat. However, I was, I started out, I used to make my own like journal comics and put them on LiveJournal, and I would take the best ones and staple them together as a mini comic. And there was a thing out here in California called the Alternative Press Expo, or APE. And it was a place where you could go and have mini comics and zines and, you know, it was a lot of indie books and stuff. And so I was already doing that, which isn't real because I was just stealing copies on the copier at the place I worked at. But it was just doing that.
We play the cards with Delta.
Yeah, but it's like a slow boil, right? Like, so you do that and then... You know, like I mentioned earlier, I was drawing, you know, and drawing was kind of primarily where I was putting my focus. So, you know, I'd have a pinup appear, like I had a pinup appear in this Oni book. And then I did a small backup and, you know, a couple of comics. And so it's like, it was like cooler and cooler and cooler until you get to this point where it's like, you know, it's a whole graphic novel that I've drawn, written by someone else. And then, you know, it's more interesting, the feeling, to me, it's seeing the shelf grow with my name on the spine is cooler to me than just that first one, because it was like, you know, this is the only direction I can go. Like, I don't have a lot of other skills in other areas, so it's like I got to make this work. but yeah, as you see the spines of collected editions and stuff with your name on it start to get bigger and bigger, that's a cool feeling. Like, you know, like filling up a bookshelf. That's rad. I got like a little ego shelf in my house where I keep all my comics, and I've got like a stand where I'll display when I get my comps of like the most current issue or whatever.
That's so wonderful. Like, oh, sorry.
Oh, that's, yeah, really, no.
Like, I love that answer, because it could have been as simple as oh, you know, I got my first check and it was like, yeah, I made it, I'm here.
Yeah.
But I love your answer so much more.
Yeah, it's like it's brick by brick, to use, you know, Doom Patrol terms. And you're slowly building this thing as you go.
I was not the right person to pick as moderator for here, because I'm fangirling hard.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
I had the honor of getting to do the Night Terror Zatanna.
Oh, nice.
And I loved it. It brought me back to Doom Patrol, because I'd fallen away from them for a while. And it looks like we may have lost David, so I'm going to have to bring him back.
Okay. But
for me, I just wanted to say thank you, because that was such a well-done book. It could have been what we see so many times, where it's part of an arc, but it's not really anything that's worth reading. And it was. It was beautiful.
Well, some of it was kind of happy accidents, too, because it was... I wanted Doom Patrol to be a part of Night Terrors, but just the way the timing worked with getting, you know, solicits and everything out the door. We didn't have numbers on issue one of Doom Patrol in time to see if it would warrant being a part of that crossover. So it was like, I knew I was doing Zatanna, and in an early draft of the first Night Terrors alpha book, whatever it's called, Josh, he asked me, he's like, hey, is it cool if I have the Doom Patrol in there? Because I kind of wanted, he wanted to flash around and show different people falling asleep. It didn't make it in the final draft, but like, it was going to be like Cliff with everybody else asleep around him. And so I kind of had this idea that like Cliff was also one of the only other people awake when I was writing Zatanna. And just this idea that she's surrounded, she reaches out for a champion. And, you know, I'm like,
I love that bit.
Well, it's like, so I put Robot Man in there, and I was like, that's really interesting because those characters are really different. You know, they're almost kind of, it's Magic Lady, Robot Man. It's, they're opposites in a lot of ways. And then I was like, well, they are opposites, but what are their similarities? And it's like, when you start thinking about that, it's like, well, one of their similarities is they both had a lot of loss. And Zatanna's loss specifically happened in front of a Doom Patrol. You know, when her father died, and I was like, oh, so she probably just doesn't even like the Doom Patrol, just on a general, you know, kind of thing, like Mento freaked her out, and she's just like, forget the rest of the Doom Patrol. So it was like, knowing that Zatanna calls Robot Man in, and then she's disappointed immediately, like, oh, this fucking guy, you know, and he doesn't, he hates magic, and that's something that I was already doing in the main series, where he's just like, every time magic comes up, he's like over it. So it was just like, it all kind of tied together to kind of have them, you know, at odds with each other. And then when they finally like squash the beef and they realize, okay, we're cool, you take it away. And you know, and then like Cliff gets stabbed and becomes knighted and all of that stuff. Yeah, it was super fun writing those two characters together. I'd love to get an opportunity to bring them back together.
Oh, the build-up.
Yeah.
The build up when it was like she summons a champion and you're like, who's it gonna be? And you turn the page and it's Cliff and you're just like, ah. that was a real fun to read.
Yeah, and it did make it, you know, like, because I'm a fan too and a reader, and I know a lot of times when it's a big crossover, there can be really strong issues and really weak issues, and sometimes, you know, there can just be weird issues. Like I remember reading Inferno as a kid, and there was just like, you know, I really like the Daredevil issues, but he fights a vacuum at the end of the day that's just kind of choking him, you know? And it's like, it's super fun, but it's weird, but it's like, it doesn't really connect to the larger story. Right. And so finding a way to like get that same kind of cool small moments that like that Daredevil issue had, but still connected to the larger story where it felt like it counts and it matters, I thought that was really important. So yeah, I was really happy with how it turned out. It did really well sales-wise. Like, people were really hungry for Zatanna, and I think a lot of people love that combination of those two characters. I think contrast works, you know? It's like every buddy action movie. It's like you got the clean-cut straight person and the really messy person. It's like odd couple stuff always works. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, as we three who all reviewed numerous titles during that event, it was nice to actually know that one of the events was actually happening, because the amount of reviews we had to do where I was like, is this a dream? This is a dream. No, this isn't a dream. Is this going to have options? And just to have someone who was awake and summon someone else who was awake, and you know, okay, they're fighting the monsters, they're fighting the demons, they're fighting their own demons. It's an odd couple scenario, but this is actually happening. So next issue where we see these guys, they'll remember this.
And then I knew they were going right from my thing to Josh's. So it's like, you basically, the moment they leave my series, they enter into Josh's series, because you know she's still got the sword and all that stuff. So
yeah. Oh yeah, didn't I think yours might have ended with a to be concluded in a Night Terror, like the final one. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, and they just like, I knew they were gonna show up there, and like as I was wrapping up issue two, Josh was showing me like some of Howard Porter's art, and he's like, oh cool, he's drawing Robot Man. That's really neat to see Howard Porter drew Robot Man, you know? And it was just like, I was sending that stuff to Burnham, and Burnham was like, oh, it's dope, you know? It was just like neat to see other people using our version of Robot Man and things like that.
That's wonderful, thank you for that. I mean, do you have time for about one more question from each of us? Would that be okay?
Yeah, we can do a couple more. We got a late start, so it's fine.
That was my fault, technical difficulty.
No, it's all good.
All right, well then, James, that brings us back to you.
Oh, back to me. I was going to say, having read some of your earlier stuff and read some of your very, very current stuff, how would you say that your writing style has changed as you've kind of grown as a writer?
It's a hard question because sometimes it feels harder and easier, you know, depending on the day and depending on the story. For instance, with Doom Patrol, the process on that ended up being kind of weird because we didn't know we were doing four. I was basically done with all of the issues before I had to write four, which was the therapy issue. But when I got to issue five, which is the issue that just came out with Niles and all that stuff, I was really stuck on that issue. And because it was just like I had a, you know, the general idea for my outline of what I wanted to do, but I was just having a hard time finding the emotional core in the issue. And initially it didn't even have Niles in it. And I was just trying to, you know, kind of find that. And so what I had to do is I skipped it, and then I wrote issues, what became 6 and 7. And kind of, so I had, issues 1, 2, and 3, 4 didn't exist yet technically, and then I had issues 6 and 7. So this was going to be kind of like, you know, the one of the middle issues of the series. And so I just kind of whiteboarded everything that had already happened in the issues that I wrote. Some I had art for, like Burnham was maybe done with issue 2 by the time I was doing this, or, you know, it was in process. So I could see some of the stuff, but I was still just kind of wrote down the things that I wanted to get out of this stuff. You know, things that I needed, things that were maybe missing from the story, and figured it out. And it was like, you know, I had that idea, like as I was writing 6 and 7, where Niles is kind of chilled on the idea of, like, you know, he's like, this is the Chief's Doom Patrol now. And then he like kind of hands the baton to her. So that opened up the idea of putting him in 5, and really, so we could just see that process of how he got there. And just, you know, so then it was like, I kind of, you know, took a step back. I have a whiteboard in my house and I was kind of looking at all of it. And then I went back and I wrote issue 5. And then we got authorized to do 4. And doing that process, it actually kind of gave me an idea of what I wanted to do with 4, where it was like, looking at all that, I was like, you know, I really wish I could have gotten a place to go emotionally deeper on the characters, because they didn't really get to do that. It's something I would have done if we had a Night Terrors crossover, you know, because that's like, if we're going into everybody's nightmares, it's the perfect place to do that. But it was like, this is going to be different. So talking to my editor, Ben, I was like, well, what if we did a therapy issue, like those old X-Factor issues? But it's different, right? Because like, she's the therapist, Dr. Cinco, she's like a fifth dimensional, like she channels fifth dimensional intelligence. So it's like, we can kind of mix up like it and do, show their thoughts kind of, you know, and make these like really cool two-page spreads where we have like this, them kind of walking through their thoughts as they talk about their feelings and emotions. And so it was like, I couldn't have written that issue 4 without having done everything else and knowing where it was and where it started and where we were going and all of those things. So I feel like the better you get as a writer, the harder it gets, because you start thinking deeper about it and you start ripping things apart, tearing things up.
I was going to say, true Doom Patrol fashion, you avoided the stuff that was difficult, went to the end, and then had an emotional kind of journey on the way back and kind of worked your way through it.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I did it Doom Patrol style. But yeah, like, so, you know, doing comics like that, it's I guess, as I've gotten better as a writer, I've just found ways to make things more thoughtful and compelling and meaningful. Like, I'm always kind of thinking about those things. A lot of times my goal with a comic, like I almost kind of want you to be mad at me when you get to the end of the comic, in that you're mad that you can't immediately pick up the next issue.
Oh, good. So you're commenting.
Right. Like, well, you know, it's like, that's my favorite comics, where it's like so good that I want to pick up the next issue. And that's easy if you're reading something in the trades, because you can just binge that stuff and go through it. But I think what a lot of the modern audience forgets, where they have the luxury of having all the material on the apps and all these different things, is that We used to have to wait for this stuff, and you used to have to just, you'd get to the end of the month, and you'd be left on that cliffhanger, and you'd just be like, so mad that you didn't get to read more. And I, you know, sometimes people get mad at me online for that, but that's like, that's right where I want you, because it means you're going to come back next month. And you're gonna, you know,
statement. Next
month. Yeah.
Not me.
But I think it's a good place where it's like, you love it so much, you're mad there's not more. I think that makes for good comics. And so if I can find ways to do that, or if I can find ways to like make you want more when you get to the end of it, then I feel like I've done a good job.
Well, yeah, mission accomplished, 100%. Yeah. Watch out for my Barna accounts.
Fair enough.
I mean, I'm just going to be like, I'm very upset in reviews, but David's like, look, we're going to take it a little bit.
Campaign deeper. Of misinformation.
Yeah. Hopefully I don't get deemed too hard in a review. I have gotten reviews before where it's like, I can't believe they left this on a cliffhanger. It's like, comics, that's the whole thing. But, you know, most people get it. I think that are reviewing comics, like they understand, you know, the mechanics of it and things like that for sure.
Gotta leave them wanting more.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, David, get it out your system. It is your turn, my friend.
Okay, so when I was reading each individual issue, I kind of got the feeling that you wanted maybe one of the characters a bit more forward than the rest of them in each one.
Sure.
Is there any of the characters that you feel kind of needs a bit more of a highlight than the others?
I would have liked to... I mean, I have more stories, and you know, we're pushing for a volume 2. We don't have official word on that yet, but there are places I want to dig into more characters. I feel like I got some of Elastawoman more fleshed out to the place I want her in the therapy issue. I feel like we kind of hit all those marks. There are moments that I wish I had space for here, but it's in the, you know, the larger series, but I feel like it's okay to kind of leave that stuff, you know, on the table for the next series. But yeah, there's definitely relationships I want to explore more and dig in a little deeper. You know, and then new characters keep presenting themselves. You know, there's a character that turns up in 6 and 7 who I've loved since she appeared a long time ago. And I've been dying to get her on the table because I think she's one of the coolest characters in Patrol Legacy. And so it's like, you know, that's a character I want to spend more time with eventually and things like that. So, yeah, got a lot of stuff there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm so mad we can't talk like about spoilers right now, because we were talking before we went to call about, I think, the character you're talking about. And I was like, ooh, I'm so excited. I wonder when that character was created.
I mean, we can talk about it if you want to cut that out and put it on the podcast.
Hi, editor.
Drops, you know, or drop like a special little bonus 10 minutes of talking about issue 6. I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
Waiting for our editor's disapproval.
Yeah.
I don't sense any disapproval. There is no disapproval. They let me be in charge. It's their own fault.
That's their fault.
Yeah. Offered willingly.
That's on them.
They say no.
Yeah.
I do have another one from Steve J. Ray.
Okay.
And this one is probably one of my favorite questions to ever get to ask people. What is a question out of the many interviews that you have had that you've never been asked that you want to answer?
I don't know. I mean, I guess like I enjoy talking process, like talking about things like what it's like dealing with the empty page and things like that. But I think there's a lot of times those questions are not interesting to anybody unless they actually are writers and artists. You know what I mean? And it's like, but I'm a process junkie. Like there's Will Eisner did this book called, is it Will Eisner? Yeah, it's Will Eisner, I think. He did a book called, Shop Talk. And he basically just talks to different creators of his time. And it's just like them just going through like, what are the tools you use, what kind of, you know, and how do you do this, and like just really getting into the nitty gritty of stuff. And I love stuff like that. If I ran a podcast myself, if I had time for such a thing, I would make a podcast called The Empty Page, and it would just be all about a creator's approach to the empty page, because to me that's the hardest part. When it's easy to go back over a script and edit it and review it and tweak it, or even once you have the outline, it's you know, a little easier to write the script from the outline. When you have nothing, when you start at zero, it's the hardest part, and sometimes that just means, you know, staring at a wall for a few hours. Like, it can feel very depressive. It can, you know, you can really be in the weeds. Sometimes you have to take a walk. Sometimes you have to take a nap. Like, there's just however you, like, the methods of getting through that, I think, is super interesting to me, because it's different for everyone. You know, everybody has different processes. You know, for instance, Tom King and I talked at shows. We talked about this kind of stuff. And Tom has this process where he writes a script a week no matter what. And he basically works. He just has like a regimen. He works Monday through, I think, Thursday. And then Friday is for editing. I may have that wrong, but it's basically that. And so depending on how his week goes, that Friday when he has to edit can be easy, or it can be the worst experience of his life, you know, because he gets to this place where it's like, oh, this script is trash, I gotta start over. But he's still committed to getting it done that week. And so, you know, and I asked him, like, well, how often does that happen? And he's like, maybe once a month, where it's just the worst week of my life because I'm struggling with the script. And, you know, that's really the truth of it with writing, is like sometimes you whip a script out in like 2 days, and sometimes it takes you more than a week. And if it takes more than a week, you start feeling grindy because, you know, you got other scripts to write and other things to do. But yeah, that's talking about that stuff is super interesting. It'd be like a podcast for, you know, just people that make comics. So we have a wide audience.
You kind of lucked out, didn't you? Because you were saying about the blank page, but that itself is a location in Doom Patrol. So
yeah.
Just staring at the white
screen. It's all connected, right? Like it all interacts with each other. But, yeah.
I remember a long time ago seeing a Twitter thread by, I think it was Daniel Warren Johnson, where he was talking about like all of his process and everything, and the amount of comics creators just like, please talk process with me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, we're hungry. I mean, half the time at shows when we're kind of off on our own, there's like three things, right? We're talking about money, gossip, or we're talking about process. You know, we're just kind of having those conversations. And, you know, a lot of times it's just, well, how do you do this? How do you solve this problem? Also, you know, sometimes getting stuck is really interesting to me, because there are times, like I said, Josh and I are story buddies. I talk to him probably more often than any other creator in comics. Maybe Burnham is kind of running close currently since we're making together, but sometimes I'll be stuck on something, or Josh will be, and we'll call each other, and just the act of talking out the problem before the other person gets to contribute an answer, they're like, oh, I got it, I figured it out, and you hang up and you go back to work. But sometimes you just need to say it out loud to another person, so, and then it's like somehow that getting it out of your head and into the world changes things, and it makes it work better, like that. So it's all that stuff is super fascinating to me, because it's not a connect the dots ABC process. There is something ephemeral to it, you know, that is just like, it's, you know, there's a weird magic to it that can only be understood by other people that go through that process. And, you know, you guys write, you know, I'm sure you've hit that same thing where it's you're like, how do I talk about this book? As if you're doing a review. Like, sometimes it's like you gotta go take a walk and just figure it out and wrap your head around something. Like it's definitely inhabiting that same space.
I was gonna say, I think my hardest part when doing a review is pulling back.
Sure.
Because Steve gets on me all the time. He's like, he goes, I feel your heart in the review. He goes, but you're giving too much away. You gotta leave one more.
Yeah, yeah. But that's, I mean, I'm almost happy to like put too much in, because you can, it's easy, it's so much easier to edit. Once you've got something on the empty page, it's no longer the empty page. It's no longer a monster, right? Like you can,
right.
You know, you've heard about the garbage draft or the zero draft, right? Where you just kind of vomit it out. And then now you've got something to work with. And having clay to mold is better than just trying to first make the clay. So yeah, definitely. Got anything else? You want to do a secret 10 minutes on issue 6? I'm happy to do it.
Well, secret, I think we'll do a secret 10 minutes on issue 6 once we stop recording.
I mean, you can record it and use it later if you want to use it after issue 6 comes out. I mean, I'm down for whatever you want
to
do.
To all the people listening, you wish you were us, don't you?
You wish you could go back in time, yeah.
No, I think we would all love that. Do you guys have any other questions for Dennis?
I think all good from me. I did want to say, though, I heard that Steve J. Ray is currently suffering from a scarecrow fear toxin attack, and we all wish him a speedy recovery.
Oh, no. Is he COVID? He got a COVID thing going on?
Something to do with his chest. He had a really bad asthma attack, and they're just trying to...
Oh, no.
Get everything situated for him. He just had to take it easy.
My mom.
But I agree with
feels
him.
With asthma. Yeah, it's rough.
But that just means that if we get secret bonus footage, we have this lovely little icing on top to make.
Yeah, you can really drive the FOMO home for him.
Exactly. Well, I have no further questions, so I'm gonna open the floor to you and let you spoil us.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys want to nerd out, like, ask away. Like, I can't. I'll tell you as much as I can without spoiling issue 7.
James, this was your idea. Go.
It was the...
Super fun. You guys are going to love 7. It's crazy.
I've got to edit all of that out and put in bleeps and spoilers and everything.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, if after, you know, like, do it a few days after 7 drops or after you drop your review, I'm totally fine with it. Once it's out in the world, it's free to discuss. And if I retweet, I'll put spoilers on it. but yeah, if you guys have any other questions about that, I'm happy to.
I have a random one.
Sure.
So mine harkens back to issue 1, and it's the chief in a lovely tete-a-tete with Batman. And pardon my French here for a second, but with the fuck you to Batman.
Yep.
Because that's literally what it was.
Yeah. There's no other way to describe it. That's exactly
it's really not. Like, I was thinking in my head, I'm like, how can I be polite about this? But it's not.
Yeah.
Like, it truly is a beautiful take yourself and go. You guys can go home.
I'm going to sway to this side and be like, yeah, I don't really judge you for that.
But in that issue, there's just a little hint, a taste of the fight that we get to see and have known as nerds for years between Professor X and Magneto. Did you mean for any of that to come in, or were you inspired by that at all?
There's definitely, it's more broadly, there's definitely an X-Men vibe there without question throughout the whole work. And like, I had a little fun kind of cheekily drawing, you know, parallels to the X-Men with like Flex Force and, you know, like the memo page that we did in issue 2 and things like that. But even if you look at the opening spread on issue 1 with that big D and the little tiny characters standing across, I mean, that's if go look at New X-Men 114 by Grant, and it's the same kind of vibe, you know. And we did that. That's all on purpose. Like, I was definitely trying to draw parallels to like, this is DC's X-Men, but also having fun with it and having a kind of, you know, there's a tradition to that, like, you know, the Doom Force comic back in the day where they made fun of Rob Liefeld comics and things like that. And you could almost say like Grant's run of the Fantastic Four was more of a pastiche of, or Grant's run of Doom Patrol was more of a pastiche for the Fantastic Four. Mine is probably a little bit of a pastiche for the X-Men and, you know, even their new X-Men in specific. There's a lot of similar parallels there. But one of my first exposure to the X-Men as a kid was in the Secret Wars miniseries. And there was this bit in like where, you know, that's just a toy comic. It's not a sophisticated comic, but it was, you know, to my young mind, it was amazing. But there's this bit where like all the Avengers are kind of off over here and the X-Men are standing off over themselves. And they're more comfortable talking to Magneto than they are talking to their fellow heroes. And it was just like, and everybody, all the other characters, like Spider-Man, the Avengers, like, oh, those guys are so weird. Like, what's their deal? You know, and it's like, it's not like that anymore. But it was then. And that was, I love that idea of like, where I think the Justice League, you know, they acknowledge the Doom Patrol, and they'll go to the Doom Patrol if they have like a weird surgery problem that they need Miles Caldwell to handle. But for the most part, they're not, you know, they're not invited to the cookout, to use a term. You know, like it's when they all get together at the end of every crisis and they do their big pose. The Doom Patrol's never in that picture. Like they're never a part of the group shot. Like the Doom Patrol is often forgotten, and that's and metatextually and textually, the Doom Patrol are kind of just, you know, off to the side. And so, to me, the you know, the biggest representative of the current DCU internal superhero establishment is Batman, right? And so I was like, well, we're going right to Gotham, and we're going to go all over Batman's stomping grounds, and we're going to barge in, and we're going to do our thing. Because that's like Batman's one rule. It's like, this is my city. You know, you don't come to my city. I do this. And they just go right to his city, and they're right there in his business. And it was a good way to kind of vocalize the contrast between what they're doing and how they think the Justice League is wrong. And then just from thinking about that stuff, like, you really do think about the core Justice League. The only real metahuman is the Flash, you know? And it's like, you know, and that's even debatable depending on which, you know, origin you subscribe to. But like as far as someone who actually had a metagene and had something alter their metagene, it's the Flash. Everybody else is aliens and Amazons or guys with tools like Green Lantern and Batman. And the Flash, his main power is running, so nobody can catch him. But all the other metahumans that can be caught and rounded up and used by like Metagen Corporation or used by the government to be thrown into Suicide Squad. If you think about it, and I do a lot of deep thinking about silly stuff, Suicide Squad's really fucked up, and the fact that the Justice League knows it exists and doesn't shut it down immediately is really weird to me, you know? And it's like, you know, it's stuff like that, you know? I think about brains raising gorillas and giving them intelligence and then falling in love with them. That's also super weird to me.
It's not just you, man. It's not just you.
It's a toxic relationship, and I felt
every time I see those two, I'm just like,
I felt like Mala was groomed, and maybe it was time for them to have a breakup.
Speaking that line in the first issue where the chief is just like, yeah, you're only metahuman as the Flash, and he's always moving too fast for anything. Like, it's such a perfect encapsulation of it. Why would the League care at that point?
And again, I'm not trying to diminish the Justice League, and I don't think the Justice League is bad. I think they're great, but I think that they are not something that's built for granular problems. And I think that the metahuman thing is a granular problem. And as we kind of learned as the series goes on, this was something the Doom Patrol was building towards, but they got pushed on the stage way faster than they wanted because of the Lazarus Planet event, which caused like more metahumans than ever. So now they're kind of in the middle of it, they're in the thick of it, and they've got more eyes on them than they really want, and which is the government and everybody else. So yeah, whenever we get into the second series, we'll like start digging into some of those other, like the consequences of their actions, I guess you could say.
Said it before, and I'll say it again, 7 issues is not enough.
Agreed. It's kind of always the plan of, because of Burnham's schedule and stuff, that we were going to do like a miniseries each year. So that was, you know, they're talking internally now. I'm just figuring it out. So hopefully it'll come together. Hopefully it'll happen, you know, because you never know. The market's really crazy right now, too.
Consistent Doom Patrol is the dream.
Yeah. We can get it. Also, I would love to see the Doom Patrol participating in crossovers. You know, just kind of being around, that would be something that would be really great too.
Well, the next big event is Beast Planet, isn't it?
Beast, yeah, I think that's what it's
and called. Beast Boy has ties to the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not a part of that. I don't think the Doom Patrol, I haven't heard anything about the Doom Patrol appearing there, but yeah, like the way it was coming together and the way we were doing our stuff, it just, the stars didn't align, you know, like we're kind of getting our footing, but that would have been a good place to have it. But hopefully we can get that eventual, I think there is a confrontation of some kind of between Beast Boy, Beast Girl, the Doom Patrol, like all of that. They'll meet eventually, like that stuff.
Yes.
Jimmy, something I want to see happen too, yeah. Yeah, I want to do all the things, you know, like it's having Peacemaker kind of be like this, like, you know, antagonistic part of the book is really fun too. You know, those, obviously those Peace Hammer robots are my version of Sentinels and stuff. It's just me and Burnham having jokes and having fun, but, you know, kind of getting that stuff in there. I think it's, I'm really excited with where we landed with this book. Also doing the individual done in one issues, it makes it feel bigger. Like, I feel like this series feels bigger than if we just did a 6-issue miniseries that had just a, you know, just one plot through all 6 of those issues. Instead, if you think about it, we've gotten to do, you know, 6 separate stories, which is the 5 regular issues, and then 6 and 7, which is important. Yep. Any other questions? Anything else you want to throw at me before I go?
I think so. I think we're ready to wrap.
Cool.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and we'll close this quesadilla up.
Sweet.
Dennis, it has been an absolute pleasure and honor speaking with you. When I say I watched all of our eyes glaze over and just fall into the world of Dennis, I mean it.
Oh, sweet.
It's really a pleasure. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. And hopefully we'll do it again maybe when we get the next one off the ground.
Yes. Project. Yes. So, yeah.
Please.
And I appreciate the reviews. Everybody taking the time to talk about our books is always a really good thing.
I promise that's our pleasure as well.
Yeah. It's anything I can do to help get the word out about the book is very much appreciated.
Sorry, I have one last question just before we go.
Okay.
Where did Mr. Baseball come from?
So funnily enough, that is a very old character of mine. If you look on, back when I was mostly drawing, I did a thing where I would do like a drawing a day, and I'd just start drawing random stuff, random characters. And I made up Mr. Baseball, and it was just a sketch. And so when that issue of Brave and the Bold came up, because Ben knew that Mitch was going to probably need a breather somewhere in between there, he's like, hey, can you do this story that'll kind of be there? And I was like, can I introduce a new villain? I just think it's like the perfect idea for a Batman villain. It's just a guy with just his head carved like a baseball, you know. I wanted the opportunity, like the old animated series Heart of Ice episode was certainly an inspiration for that, you know, just the idea of trying to do a little tight done in one villain origin story. I was super happy how it came out too. Like, hopefully
it was fantastic.
Yeah. Get one day revisit that character, or, you know, drop him in whenever I get a chance.
Thank you for answering that. Sorry.
No, for sure. Anytime.
I can't think of a better question to have ended out with. All right. Well, David, again, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Holler if you have any follow-up questions or anything like that.
We absolutely will. But until then, where can the good people find you?
You can pretty much Dennis Culver, all one word, everywhere. Like, that's Instagram, Substack, Twitter, whatever we're calling it now, and Threads, Blue Sky, all the things. You can find me. It's so complicated now. Facebook, Dennis Culver everywhere. You can pretty much find me. If you Google me, I won the Google war. I'm the top result. So did it. So that's really the greatest achievement.
All right. First was, let me go ahead and complete the void.
Yeah.
James, go ahead.
You can find me on Twitter, or now X, with the name James Attius DC27, where I will retweet all of my reviews and podcasts that I do with DC Comics News or Dark Knight News.
Yes, and then David.
You can find me on Twitter at David Does Stuff, where I tweet such gems as rats have hands. Please don't follow me.
All right. And then for myself, you can find me on Twitter. I am Devour All Words, or Devour All DC. I do reviews for DCN, DC Comics News, and Dark Knight News, as well as Fantastic Universes. And for DC Comic News, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and anywhere for the podcasts where you listen to podcasts, whether that's Apple, Spotify, There's a whole bunch. I mean, pretty much look up DCN podcasts and you will find us just about anywhere you can listen to podcasts. All right. Well, then, James, would you please lead us off?
Remember, everyone, read
for
comics.